Welcome to Claim Edge, your resource for litigated claims management and resolution. I'm Jim Chapman, your host, and my guest today is Rana Ruppelt. Rana is the CEO of the Claims and Litigation Management Alliance, which is dedicated to meeting the professional development needs of the claims and litigation management profession. Rana shares her story of how she got started with insurance defense litigation, eventually working in-house for major property and casualty insurance companies, and then being tapped to lead the CLM. I enjoyed the conversation, and I'm sure you will too. Because the Claim Edge podcast is focused on litigated claims, today we'll be talking with Rana about hot topics in claims litigation, how technology is having an impact on claims litigation and litigation management, and the role CLM plays in educating and developing claims professionals. Rana, welcome to the Claim Edge podcast. Great to have you a guest on the show. I know that previously you were general counsel for Good to Go Auto Insurance. What led you to start working in property and casualty insurance?
It's funny because I think like most people that you would ask, I fell into it. When I was in my first year of law school, I got a job as a law clerk at an insurance defense firm. And it's a firm that represented self-insured trucking companies. So they felt that the way the attorneys could really learn the business and learn the skills that you need to be a good trial lawyer, they had us adjusting claims. So I would be on call for tractor trailer accidents in Northeast Ohio all times of day and night. It was very cool. I had a stenographer that I would call. He did shorthand, and he would meet me at the scene, and we'd start taking statements of the participants and the witnesses. So that's how I learned how to do an investigation.
That's an amazing story. So did it ever conflict with like exams or, you know, class?
Definitely conflicted with class. I got through. I actually did very well in law school. But it was really exciting, and I learned so much because I also did traditional law clerk stuff. But the adjusting part was the primary aspect of what I was doing. By the time I graduated from law school, I already felt comfortable knowing how to negotiate. And I had self-taught so much handling cargo claims and negotiating salvage for steel that fell off the back of a trailer and, you know, getting that sold. So it was really an incredible experience.
So we won't turn this into a criticism of the legal education process, but you obviously got a way different experience in the form of a legal education than most folks coming out of law school today.
I was lucky enough to get a lot of practical experience while I was working at this firm. It was great.
I think it was last year you were tapped to lead Claims and Litigation Management Alliance, right?
Yes, it's been 14 months.
Obviously, there's been a great opportunity, I'm sure, to work both with claim professionals and defense attorneys or coverage attorneys. What are you seeing as the sort of hot issues or hottest issues in the property and casualty insurance space today?
There's a few that I'm seeing. You know, cyber remains a hot, evolving issue. I think the bad guys are always trying to be one step ahead of everyone. And there's still, unfortunately, I think too many companies out there that aren't up to speed on the technology security and or don't have the processes in place. So there's a lot of vulnerabilities still out there, and that remains to be a really big issue, I think, in the industry. You know, climate change, of course, is a huge issue. The catastrophes between the hurricanes and the wildfires and the frequency of all of those remains an issue. And, you know, flooding, how does that get addressed? Is that something that should be a public area versus a private market? So that's an issue. Social inflation remains out there. ALI, which is eventually, I think, as you and I know, were treatises that suddenly become very advocacy related, and courts are adopting and expanding theories of the law based on nothing. I think there's a lot of challenge there. We have the increased verdicts, the nuclear verdicts, which are those that are over $1 billion, and litigation funding, which is a huge issue, and one that is interestingly, I think there's a split in the industry on that because it's a great solid way to make investment. So I think there's some carriers that are even in play, although it really hurts the industry as a whole. And then technology and everything that's happening with technology. And we all know, especially the last couple of years, talent remains a crucial issue in the industry.
Yeah, so that's really quite a laundry list to be grappling with, right? So just to kind of unpack that maybe more one at a time, it's really affecting not just cyber rates or coverage rates. It's really become much more operational, I think. Are you seeing a lot of carriers pushing law firms, or even the other direction, law firms pushing carriers around, you know, kind of tightening up their information management, their data management, their access, those sorts of things?
Yeah, it's interesting because in my last role, we had cyber, I went through a couple of rounds of underwriting on our renewals for our cyber coverage. And it was interesting my last 2 years there because the second last year was a very traditional underwriting approach that you would take with any of your other types of policies that you would have as a business. My last year there, it was very different. We went through a security assessment, and that was part of the whole underwriting procedure. And I think that's happening more and more, that carriers are not even giving companies a quote anymore unless the tools are already in place to help protect. So it's much more risk management, much more proactive from the cyber carriers, and can be very, very expensive for smaller companies.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I've seen in the carrier side of the market is, again, from an underwriting perspective, is they're mandating certain things, you know, from the standpoint of risk mitigation. But one that I thought was pretty clever is they actually provide a password manager. But the requirement is if you want coverage, you've got to use it. And they monitor your use of that. So, because we all know that compromised passwords are an easy way into, you know, somebody's system. So there's really a lot of creativity going on there, but it's a reflection of the risk, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's interesting that example. I mean, that's so fundamental, and it's incredible how many companies are still don't have multi-factor authentication. And that in itself can really be a game changer on the security. So we still, you know, we have a ways to go, I think, until we really get companies up to speed consistently.
Yeah, some carriers, I think from a panel perspective or outside counsel perspective, they're actually doing the same thing. They want to know what your security practices are before they're going to let you handle their claim files, right?
Yeah, I've been involved at some of the carriers I can think about that I've been at. Even 15, 20 years ago, we had full security questionnaires that we would send out to potential vendors. Obviously, the questions were different, but the diligence was happening even as far back as then. And I think anything, and I think from a, you know, anytime a vendor wants to sell a product that involves the use of data, they've got to be ready. They have to have their security in place and be ready to answer those questions. And it's interesting because now we're on the other side at CLM because we now provide some of those to the carriers that we work with because of some of our products, there's data transfer.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we're not for profit. So, you know, it took a minute to get up to speed on that.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a compliance cost to that too, right? Whoever you had to bring on board to manage that for you. So it adds to the cost of delivering a product. And that's challenging in the nonprofit space, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
You also mentioned climate. Think of wildfires, floods, you know, hurricanes, other, even drought, right, as events. But at the same time, it's revealed a need for probably more products, right, from an insurance perspective and the management of catastrophic losses. I mean, I think there's been I don't know whether you've seen it. You probably have because you have more of a front row seat than I do in the TPA space. The responsiveness, the way to go manage claims on the front end with the perspective that you don't want them to turn into litigation, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the loss control piece of it has become a larger and larger aspect of claims or risk, depending on what company you're looking at. And I think that's going to only continue. And I think when we talk about technology, there's interplay there also with the same thing. The nice thing that's happening in climate is there's a lot more modeling that's able to be occurring now. So while the frequency was very uneven, we know the severity is just so severe. But now through AI and other modeling, they're getting a much better sense. And the accuracy, I think, continues to increase, which really helps the underwriting of those, understanding, number one, what the product needs are, and then number two, underwriting pricing those products.
I'm interested in the claims space. So, you know, there's a catastrophic event, affects tens of thousands, sometimes, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Are you seeing a lot of carrier-side collaboration in the claims process? As a result of that, people thinking about it, like, you know, we're kind of all in this together. Is there anything that we can do collectively, collaboratively for a better kind of claims result or claims outcome?
Interestingly, so CLM is part of the institutes, and the institutes does have a resiliency initiative through our III organization. Where, as a not-for-profit and neutral, as you were in the industry, they are facilitating some collaboration with the carriers that have a lot of business in that space to talk about and look at new and evolving ways to both understand the upcoming risks as well as addressing them, and done in a way, of course, that doesn't impact antitrust issues.
That's always a challenge, but that's very forward thinking too, because it doesn't seem like cat losses are going away anytime soon.
No. I would say, you know, for the feet on the ground, you know, there's probably a lot less collaboration happening. It's, you know, who can get past the police lines first to start helping the insureds, I think remains, you know, an issue for everyone. And I think when they're out there, they're helping each other out. But I think there is a little bit of which of us can get there first to help.
So you also mentioned talent as a challenge. And I take it that that's kind of a broad umbrella, both hiring, you know, bringing new people into the industry, as well as retention. Are you seeing any interesting initiatives or ways in which to kind of grapple with that, that at least are showing signs of success?
Yeah, it's interesting because I have heard for probably the last 15 years that we knew there was going to be a large resignation in the insurance industry. And other industries may have been talking about it also, but I was hearing about it from the insurance perspective. And it is playing out now. The interesting piece of it is, as the boomers are getting ready to do their retirement roles, with everything that happened in 2020 and 2021, it was almost like a storm that happened at the same time. So we have the remote work, we have traditional claims handling that was happening in a certain way. So you have this years and years of institutional knowledge walking out the door. And now people are at home. The challenge to get people to be interested in getting into the industry remains a challenge. And then once they're in, getting them up to speed. So I think all of those types of things are out there. There are all kinds of initiatives. There's a lot of cooperation among the carriers as far as trying to get, from a DEI focus, trying to get people that traditionally have not been in the industry into the industry. There's a lot of the larger carriers are doing internships and collaboratives where they're getting with students while they're at the 2-year or 4-year colleges to educate them about the industry and those types of things to really attract that talent, because the need remains and is going to remain for many years to come, even with the technology enhancements.
Yeah. It's funny. I got involved in RISE this year. Uh-huh. It's an organization focused on raising up the next generation of leaders in insurance. I think it's a great organization. It's been a lot of fun being a mentor to somebody who is fairly new to the industry but thinks that they want to make it their home. What are the things you have to do to sort of navigate that? So it's initiatives like that are showing some signs of success. The question is how to kind of broaden that, right?
Absolutely. So, and actually we collaborate with Rise Professionals and I think they're doing a really nice job. We also have a group right now of our members that are developing a mentorship program for our members. That was something that we'll be rolling out next year. But everything with, you know, the remote work, the impact on the lack of talent, the issues that have happened the last couple of years, and all of this combined is really providing a rich opportunity to identify people and to get them engaged in new and different ways. So CLM is actually looking at our programming to meet both the technical substantive needs as well as the delivery needs, because the millennials and the generation after the millennials, they have different wants and interests than some of the older generations have. And we need to make sure that, especially as training has cut back at the carriers, we want to fill that need and meet that need for them.
Yeah, those are all great initiatives. Look forward to learning more about the mentorship initiative when you guys roll it out in another year or so. The other thing I heard you mention around this was, of course, social inflation. I don't want to say that that's yesterday's news because it's always on the, you know, the frontal lobes of folks that are paying attention to what's going on in litigation management, those sorts of things. What are you guys seeing, or maybe more specifically kind of doing about it in ways that you feel like you can to address it and help folks out in that direction?
Let me talk about what we're doing, and it's based on what we're seeing and actually also what our membership is asking for. So we have a nuclear verdict task force. There's a variety of initiatives that there are four teams that are working on to try and help the industry. Because I think one of the challenges with this is, I think of from a former claims executive standpoint, there we always called a certain class of casualty claims complex claims or serious injury claims. And we had various manual, for the most part, protocols in place to identify those so you could get those to the right adjuster as early in the life of that claim as possible. The challenge is, how do you identify and detect those claims that one day, at one point, were serious injury to the ones that can become those nuclear verdicts, or not even nuclear, but the multi-million dollar verdicts that even a couple of years ago worked. And there's some anecdotal information we have, and we know that, for example, that if discovery comes in and is focusing on the insured and their operations and their company and violations of safety or other protocols, that is a plaintiff attorney that is focusing on more than that case and likely will be using reptile theory and those types of things to drive a nuclear verdict. But it's still that frontline desk adjuster that's got to recognize that so they can elevate it. And I know, right, you know, offhand, I know at least three or four vendors right now that are out there trying to figure out how to automate that. What are the solutions we can give to the carriers so that it can be a systematic way to identify it? And I think the first company that is able to do that well and get to market first, I think it's going to help drive a game changer there. But there's a whole lot of data that has to go into that analysis. And some of it is not as easy to receive as others. You know, I remember many years ago that NICB, and it was ISO at the time, did an initiative to try and accumulate industry-wide data to identify fraud. And it was anonymizing individual carrier data on fraudulent claims or suspicious claims. And I think a similar type of approach has to occur today. But there's always a challenge with that because each carrier thinks they're doing it the best. and they don't want to give away, even though it's anonymized data, they don't want to give away anything inadvertently that may help their competitive advantage. But you balance that against the needs of the industry, and putting all that data in one database to be able to do that full analysis, I think could really help get us propelled forward on how to address that particular issue.
And that definitely is going to take some sort of consortium type agreement to get to a place like that. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that there needs to be some mechanism for aggregating that data, and not just aggregating it, but making sure that it's normalized in some way. To the competitive advantage point, obviously, carriers feel like this little thing that they're looking at or these couple of things that they're looking at really drive good decision-making from an SIU standpoint. Maybe they're all looking at the same thing, but they don't talk to each other in a way that allows you to make that determination, and then it would be much easier to build something on a collectivized basis, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's challenges also just from the basic injury standpoint and understanding, you know, I've even seen in certain jurisdictions, certain type of back injuries, for example, are called one thing in one jurisdiction. They're called something else in another jurisdiction. You know, just an example of a bulge and a herniation. And what does a bulge mean in certain jurisdictions versus a herniation? And does either of it matter if there's not actual symptoms that corroborate, you know, with the objective findings? But, and that's just one little nuance of one type or series of types of injuries.
You know, they have pretty good data on that in the workers' comp space because the carrier tracks the treatment. Much harder in the liability space because oftentimes the carrier has zero access to any medical information until the claimant's represented. Even then, you don't know that you're being dealt the full deck, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's a challenge, that's for sure.
We've lapsed over a little bit into this idea or this, you know, hot topic that you mentioned around technology. What are you seeing is the impact of technology on claims operations generally?
You know, I look at it from, there's the chief claims officer perspective and there's the user's perspective. And some of them are aligned and some conflict a little bit. From the user perspective, we now have a younger workforce as they're entering the market that grew up with devices. I mean, you walk, go into a restaurant and there's two-year-olds that have an iPad that they're playing with. So they're used to certain user interfaces. They're used to that whole experience that those of us that have been around a little longer learned later in our life. And I think that actually adds or has the potential to add or detract from a satisfaction from a job experience standpoint. So that's the basic thing there from a user perspective. From a chief claims officer perspective, you think about all the things that are involved in claims operations and the process of claims for the various lines of business that a CCO is managing. And think about the speed of the change of the technology. It continues its, you know, geometric change. There's so many options out there. And from, if you think of an individual line of business, even with the process of that individual claim, where can I get my biggest bang for the buck? So how do I understand what part of that claim process do I want to attack first? I think what has happened is a lot of it has been attacked at FNOL to get it in what we believe are the right hands. I think because that might be almost the easiest, but makes sense. But is that necessarily, and I don't know if we have that answer universally, is that the best way to leverage the best results for that particular carrier? So it's looking at all the options that are out there for all those stages of the claim, understanding that prioritization, and then identifying the right vendor to do it. You know, one of the things that's very attractive, I mean, we know the startups and the, you know, the VC with InsurTech and claims tech specifically is just, it's increasing at astronomical paces. And you want to make sure that you're hooking on to a vendor, to a software provider that's going to be around in 2 years. And are they at state of the art? So it's all of those things to figure out what's my appropriate software or solutions to work on first, and who do I want to partner with to do that? So I think there's a tremendous impact there. And then when you think about the business of claims anyway, automation technology is not going to solve all of the issues. I mean, there's still the people component is very, very critical in that process.
It's funny when you talk about sort of the user perspective, some folks, particularly more senior claims professionals, have this mindset that somehow the technology will put them out of a job. And I think that is the furthest thing from the truth. I think the technology can be very assistive. It can help them get the job done. It can take some of those admin tasks off of them that are just time sucks, prevent you from really thinking more deeply about the claim, but that technology can actually give you more time to think about and execute on your resolution plans.
About all those claims that I've been involved in over the years, and that there was something that came to my face that told me something was going on here, or I needed to follow up on this, or there's a particular red flag here, and therefore you should think about doing this now, and actually even prioritizing that desk for that adjuster. I mean, it allows the adjuster to really do the art of claims, and which is, you know, help develop that strategy and really move and follow through on that resolution process. The challenge is, one of the concerns I think for some folks is there's a lot of stuff that can happen now through straight through processing that young adjusters learn their teeth on. So how do we teach that skill set? Don't you want someone negotiating on a basic claim before they're negotiating on a multi-million dollar claim? And how do you learn those skill sets to do that? So that's some of the challenge, but I still think the automation is going to give the adjusters more time. And with the open positions there are right now and the turnover that happens, anything that can help an individual adjuster be more efficient in what they're doing helps the organization as a whole.
Yeah, exactly. One of the tools that we've developed can actually read a deposition transcript and identify with the natural language processing techniques that we've created key aspects of the testimony around damages and liability. So it's a big time saver to be able to, you know, surface that information. But it's those type of things that, again, they're assistive. Rather than, it's not going to decide what to do with the claim. It's still going to require a human to applying very human judgment to making those decisions. So one thing I didn't want to miss out on is, of course, we know that the Claims and Litigation Management Alliance is really devoted to professional development of claim professionals. How do you see CLM as kind of helping the industry today? Maybe on any of those topics or any others that you might have in mind.
I'd love to talk about CLM. Our mission is to meet the needs of the claims and litigation management community throughout all aspects of their career. And eventually, I want to get to the point where we're helping them get into their career. And I want to, at the other end, really utilize those people that are starting to step out, whether it's full-time or part-time, and help them with their opportunities to get back to the industry, and we want to help facilitate that. But what we have done in order to understand what those needs are and what that value is that we can provide is we've done some market research, and it's very clear to us that it's the education and the networking opportunities that CLM provides to all members of the industry. Carriers do not have the same, for the most part, I'm not saying every carrier, but for the most part, don't have the same level of training that they did when I entered the industry. I mean, there were carriers that would have the 4 or 6 week programs. You know, there's a handful out there that still do that, but for the most part, you don't see that happening. And we want to make sure that we understand. So while now we know that it's education and networking that they want, we're doing some advanced market research to truly understand the substantive or technical aspects of the education, and also how we're going to deliver the education. So we're looking at the new types of content. You know, traditionally it's been very focused about claims, claims process, litigation management, you know, panel counsel management. And especially as you think about the interface of that technology and the talent that we were just talking about, the soft skills aspects of claims handling is becoming a larger and larger importance to make a successful adjuster. So it's things like teaching empathy, interpersonal communications, even some diversity training to understand how what people say and how they talk may mean one thing to someone, but as the recipient of that information, while you're doing an investigation, it's really important to understand that everyone is on the same page there. So those types of skills, along with the leadership and mentoring and all of those things together, are going to help the industry as a whole. Additionally, the delivery. So the networking, you know, we think traditionally of networking as our in-person conferences, and we have some great in-person conferences. We get a lot of people. They spend a lot of time. I can't even tell you how many relationships I've made over the years of people in the industry. And you talk informally and you learn and see what other people are doing and what little nugget can I take from that and use for myself. That's going to continue. But we have the challenges of some people can't get on airplanes anymore to go to a conference. Again, their desk is busy. There's a cost to it. With some belt tightening that I think has not come back, and I don't think will come back, some of that travel budget, I think it's going to be years. So we're doing some experiments next year to bring the content to people and to pull someone off their desk for a one-day event where there's topics of interest, where they can network, but also get that education driving someplace that's 45 minutes or a half hour or an hour from either their home or their office. So we're looking at that. We're going to be experimenting with that. But there's also, we have technology in the learning area. So there is, you think about the online master's programs where there's cohorts. So people can still talk and network and share ideas, but they can take and get the lectures online through recorded, through on demand. So we're looking at a lot of that. And then me, I am very much a forward-thinking person from a technology standpoint. And it's funny, I don't know if you can see behind. I have my Oculus behind me. And there's a reason why I have an Oculus behind me. Because if CLN is going to be the premier provider of education and networking for our industry, we want to do it. We want to deliver that in the most state-of-the-art way. And while VR and AR today may be cost prohibitive in many circles, I think it's going to plummet very quickly. Instead of the Oculus, they already have little glasses that are $25 instead of $400. So we're starting to look at developing curricula that will allow people to get their learning through simulation, situational type training. And also with that, you have that feeling that you're actually with the people. So lots more to come on that, but really exciting times for CLM.
That is very exciting. Looking forward to seeing what you roll out. I've attended the in-person event and can't speak highly enough about it. I can see the value that CLM definitely brings. So This has been a great conversation, Rana. If any of our listeners want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
LinkedIn, probably. I'm very active on LinkedIn. They could send me a message and I'll send them, you know, my email is very easy. It's rana.ruppelt@theclm.org. You know, one thing that some people may not know, for people that have not heard of us, people that handle claims at carriers or TPAs or at corporations that handle risk, their membership to CLM is free. To get on the CLM.org to see what we offer. We have two magazines, we have e-magazines. So there's all types of resources. That's also going to be expanding. We really want to do a lot more thought leadership around claims and litigation management. But just even what we have today, there's a whole world of information.
Well, I'm sure you're going to get some takers from our listening audience. And I really want to thank you for being our guest. I love what you're doing with CLM and look forward to seeing you soon at another event.
Likewise, thanks so much. I hope to see you at our annual conference. And it's our premier conference. It's March 29th through the 31st. All the proposals have been accepted and we're working on our special party, our special gala that we always have. So more to come on that, but we're really excited. And thank you so much for inviting me. This has really been fun.
It was a real pleasure to have Rana Ruppelt, CEO of the Claims and Litigation Management Alliance, as a guest on the Claim Edge podcast. I hope you enjoyed our conversation about litigation, professional development, and the use of technology in the pursuit of better claims litigation outcomes. As Rana said, if you want to connect with her, you can do that on LinkedIn or email her at rana.ruppelt@theclm.org. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode of Claim Edge, please subscribe on your favorite podcast channel and share it with your colleagues and friends. Until next time, this is Jim Chapman on the Claim Edge podcast, signing off.